What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Unscripted, the show that brings you professionals from all walks of life, touching on their backstory, their mindset, and how they navigate through adversity and opposition, while providing you practical tips that might help you on your path. I'm your host, two-time Olympian, Olympic bronze medalist, author, and motivational speaker, Hakeem Haynes. Now, let's get into the episode.
This week on the show, I'm joined by all-conference and all-American small forward at Barden Community College, St. Bonaventure University standout, and currently playing for Rouen Metropole Basketball in France. This week, I'm joined by Andel Cumberbatch, joins me on the show. I had a great conversation with Andel. Our paths crossed when we both attended Barden Community College, the best junior college in the country. This episode is a great reminder for all of us that no matter what comes our way, all we can do is control what's in front of us, and we have to make the most out of what we have despite our situation. This episode, we get into what it was like growing up in East Orange, New Jersey, where Andel is from, the challenges of growing up in a single-parent household, similarities between a bodega versus the corner store. If you're from East Coast, New York, New Jersey area, you know exactly what I'm talking about. We talk about how he ended up at Barden Community College and what he learned about himself during that time. We talk about when he signed to St. Bonaventure University, some of the adjustments and some of the experiences that he got from there. We also talk about when he was there, when his team upset the then ranked number 18 team in the country, VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University, and what that whole experience was like. We talk about his transition from the collegiate level to making a decision about the NBA and playing overseas. We talk about the difference between playing a European style of basketball versus the American style. We talk about how he deals with pressure and the growth within himself over the years, his comeback journey from an ACL and meniscus tear. We talk about friendships, relationships, and the importance of keeping good people around you, and so much more. But before we go, if you've been enjoying the show over the years, do me a favor and head to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and review of the show. This small act goes a long way in moving the podcast forward, and it would be greatly, greatly appreciated. As I always say, you don't know what you need to hear until you hear it. So share this episode with a friend. You don't know who might need the reminder that Andel might share in this episode. So, with all that being said, enjoy this week's episode with Andel Cumberbatch.
Man, it's good to see you, man. What was today like? You had the schedule keeping you busy over there.
Yeah, man. It's just a lot of practice, man. It's a lot of practice going on. We have a lot of games. So, that's pretty much what's keeping me busy. You know, I got to, you know, I rest a lot, you know, and, you know, I just do my daily maintenance, my daily routine. So, my days go by quick, so I really can't complain.
Man, we're going to get into all of that in a little bit, bro, but I appreciate your time, man. I appreciate you jumping on. Going to go a whole bunch of different places today, man, but I like to start, especially the recent two seasons, the same way, man. I like to start the day with gratitude. Gets the spirits in the right spot, and even when you close out the day, it makes you feel good, man. So give me three things you're grateful for today, bro.
Man, I'm grateful for life. I'm grateful for my family, my friends, the one that appreciate me and want me to do good in life. And I'm grateful about the opportunities that I have in life. You know, I'm grateful for this opportunity I have to be here. You know what I'm saying? I can go on and on what I'm grateful about, man. It's too much.
Man, I always like to go back to the backstory of a person, right? Our attitudes, our cycles that we had to go through, our mindset, stuff like that doesn't just happen overnight. We're shaped through how we were brought up and turned into who we are, man. So I want to go back to East Orange, New Jersey, man. My wife's family is from the Jersey area. So I spent a lot of time moving through different parts of it, you know, mainly, you know, Brick City, right? For people who don't know, that's Newark. Mm-hmm. But when I travel through there and I'm seeing different parts of it and I'm getting her story and I'm getting her parents' story, it's not an easy area to grow up in, man. So what was the dynamics like growing up for you, especially in the 90s?
You know, majority of the times I'm with my family. You know, I live with my mom my entire life. You know, she's always at work. She's always working. She's still working today.
Yeah.
So, you know, and my entire family, you know, they're always working, you know. And, you know, the kids growing up, we played a lot. We were outside a lot. But, you know, we didn't have really too much of our father figures in our life, you know, to help us be men. So we kind of just was living life day by day. And I feel like I learned a lot. But, you know, our family, we're Caribbean, so we're always going to be taught manners and, you know, doing the right things and stuff like that. So it's never been really a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, you know, when I moved to Canada, bro, because you talk about the Caribbean, I was born in Jamaica, and I believe your parents are Jamaican as well, too. Your mom's Jamaican, right? And so yep. The household is a little bit different, right? Like, you learn a lot of indirect lessons without actually them telling you. For example, like, my mom worked a lot, too, right? So I didn't really see her growing up a lot because she was always working. And so you learn what hard work looks like by just seeing it. What were some of those lessons that you learned early, man? Maybe the community told you something. Maybe you saw something that your mom did, or maybe something that she said. What was one of those early lessons that you learned in life that you still carry over today?
I would say work ethic. I see my mom. She's always working hard, you know. Coming home late, going to work early.
Yeah.
Raising two kids, two boys at that, you know, and I'm the type of person, I'm very observant, you know, and I always watch her. She may not notice it, but I always watch my mom, and she just works so hard. You know, I've always wanted to repay her for all the hard work she's done for us.
Yeah.
And I feel like that kind of just gravitated towards me, and I just like to work hard from her.
Man, we got similar mindsets on that, bro, because I'd be feeling like that too, and I'd be getting frustrated. Like, I remember growing up, man, I was so – every move to me was strategic. Right. Mm-hmm. I saw what everybody else was doing. I'm like, yo, these guys are either going to end up in jail or they're going a different path. And I don't want to repay my mom that way. So I had to find different alternatives to get on the positive side of things. But when did basketball come into the picture, man? You know, was it something that you easily gravitated to?
Yeah, it definitely was. You know, growing up, I had a lot of cousins in my household, you know. we all lived in one house, you know, one big house, and we were all boys, and they were all older than me, so we were always playing basketball, watching NBA games, you know, around the Lakers era with Iverson, Colt versus Kobe and Shaq, and, you know, we always just be competitive, and, you know, ever since then, I just was always competitive in basketball, you know, because I was always playing with guys that was always better than me. You know, yeah. I've never been the person or the player on the court that was the best person ever. You know what I'm saying? So I've always been playing with my cousins, and they were always better than me. So I feel like that kind of helped me, you know, shape me into being a basketball player.
Man, when you talk about your mom working a lot, bro, was she ever able to come to some of your games coming up?
Nah, not really. I can't say really. But I do understand why she couldn't come, because she had to do what she had to do. She had to provide, you know. She was, you know, a single mom. And, you know, it's just like, it's hard. It's hard. You know, you got to work. You got to put food on the table. And I understand. I completely understand, you know. But now, you know, I have a little brother, and he's able to come to his games and stuff like that. So, you know, I completely understand what's going on.
Man, I tell my little brother that all the time. I was like, bro, do you understand that? Like, my mom came to... In my whole career, she came to one football game and she came to one track meet. And I was like, she coming to some of yours already. I said, man, you need to be making sure that you appreciate that.
Oh, now, yeah.
But the thing with Andell too is like, man, a lot of people growing up, especially in a situation like that, they can be resentful of that. You know what I'm saying? And it can be something that they carry over. So as a young man growing up, man, how did you not carry that with you? Because you might look up and see some of your teammates and you're just like, man, they got family over there. Their situation may be a little bit different, and it can have the potential to make you envious of it. So how did you navigate through that, man? You had your cousins, yes, but you know, it's It's a little bit different.
To be honest, at the moment when I was younger, I didn't really understand it. But, you know, as I've grown, I'm more mature now. I really do understand what was going on. But I feel like when I was younger, there was a lot of kids, a lot of my teammates, a lot of kids just that was around my age that didn't have their parents come to their game just being where I'm from. You know what I'm saying? So we didn't have really too many, maybe about, let's say, a basketball team, maybe about 3-4 parents will come.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like normal not to see other guys' parents coming. You know, it wasn't even a big thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like the coaches were really like there for us. So it wasn't really a big thing for us, you know, and especially for me, you know, it was just like whatever. I don't know why, but that's just the mentality we had growing up. Like, but now I can understand, you know, the situation, but I would, even if speaking now, I wouldn't be resentful for it because I understand the circumstances and what's going on.
Yeah. When you get to high school, man, you know, it's well, the high school level, it's different, right? Especially in American Canada, because here I'm from Western Canada, and a lot of people know Toronto, those type of area. And yeah, a lot of the guys in Toronto are able to get more exposure, and you know, they have different opportunities. Jamal Murray is from Toronto. Dylan Brooks from Toronto, right? So those guys' opportunities are a little bit different. But man, how were you navigating through those times? Because that's when you kind of start to thinking, well, there's an opportunity to go to the collegiate level, right? You get to see things on a different scale. So what was that high school transition like, navigating through the possibility of what could come with playing basketball?
It was definitely hard because, like I said, I was never the best person on the team. You know, I didn't even really get a fair chance to play high school basketball. I only played 1 year of varsity.
Wow.
Yeah, 1 year of varsity in high school, and that was the only opportunity I got. And, you know, I feel like whatever situation I'm put in, I'm always going to try to make the best of it. I don't know what it is about me, but, you know, I just like to make the best of any situation and try to just try to work hard. You know what I'm saying? So, really, that's it.
Man, what was the name of your high school?
East Orange Campus High School.
What do you remember most about those times when you weren't playing basketball?
When I weren't playing basketball, man, it was crazy in my school, man. just fights,
yeah,
just big crowds. Cause my school was big. We had a big school, so I can remember just big crowds. You know, hanging out after school with guys, going to get Chinese food, you know, and just playing in the park. You know, right after school, just playing in the park. You know. But high school was a great experience for me. I really liked my high school.
Man, when I came down and started coming to America more, and then the more that I kind of stayed down here and all these different things, man, especially in this area, right? Obviously, the history of basketball that comes in New York, New Jersey area, but also like the other things and the other names, right? Like bodegas, for example, is a big thing over there, man. Tell me a little bit about that, man. For people who don't know what a bodega is, man, give me a little bit of an explanation of it.
All right, a bodega. I mean, I'm from Jersey. We don't call it bodegas. That's
what
New
you guys
York.
Call it. What do you guys
that's
call
New
it?
York. That's I think that's New York. That's what they say in New York, bodegas. I'm not sure, but that's what they say in New York.
Yeah.
But the term is bodega, but we call it in Jersey, we call it corner stores, like, because bodegas and corner stores is the same thing. It's just two different names.
Yeah.
But in Jersey, we call it corner stores, and we call it the corner store because it's literally on almost every corner of the block. So it's like they have a corner store in every corner, and they sell like everything you need.
Yeah.
They sell chips, soda, candy, toys, electronics, turkey and cheese sandwiches, you know, whatever, eggs. They sell everything. It's like a mini supermarket that sells everything. You know, you just go in there. I remember growing up, I used to buy a ton of candy with just $1. $1. A ton of candy, bro. Like, it was crazy. But corner stores is definitely it.
Man, I remember one of my first hustles, bro, was I would buy, so candies was what you just said, like 5 cents, 10 cents, 20 cents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, I would get like $2, $3, and I would just chop those things up into like 50 cent candies and sell it for $1. You know what I'm saying? So it's like the resourcefulness growing up, man. But this is where our paths crossed, Endell, Barton Community College, man. And I always try and tell people the experience of junior college. And I tell them, no one specifically wants to really go to junior college by choice. I think either three things happen. Maybe you were in a Division One or Division Two, and you didn't have the best experience and you need a fresh start, so you go back and have an opportunity there. Or you didn't get many offers coming out of high school and you need to make a name for yourself over again. Or something happens, right? But don't get it twisted, though, man. Junior college is like, there's some dogs there.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
How did you end up at Barton Community College, man?
So quick story real quick. So, you know, I was a senior in high school. I had no offers, to be honest. I had no offers. I had like one Division III school. And, you know, he kept in contact with me. But, you know, I'm still cool with the coach up to this day. But my assistant coach, I didn't have no money. My assistant coach paid for me to go to a showcase, a basketball showcase. And I ended up doing well at the showcase. You know, Coach Fletcher, the Barton coach, he was there. He ended up liking me. He gave me a scholarship, you know. It was a D1 JUCO. You know, they told me all about it. You know, they always have D1 players coming out of the program and whatnot. So I'm like, yeah, I'm taking it, you know. At that point, I'm taking it. You know, I'm definitely going to make the opportunity worth it. I brought it up to my mom. She was like, why do you want to go to school all the way in Kansas? You want to go to a 2-year school in Kansas? You can go to Essex County colleges right down the street.
Yeah.
You can go to Bergen County, Passaic County. These colleges is 30, 25 minutes away. You can go here. These are good schools too. Why do you want to go to a community college all the way in Kansas? And I'm trying to tell her, like, yo, look, it's a basketball school. Like, this school is legit. It's a basketball school.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't take a visit or nothing to Kansas. And, you know, I don't know what happened with me and my mom, but I ended up going to Barton. So that's really how I ended up going to Barton. You know, when I got to Barton, I enjoyed every moment of it. You know, that's when I met you, a couple other guys. You know, it was just a great experience in Barton.
Bro, it's so funny, man. It's funny hearing you tell your side of it and how the similarities continue, because, you know, how I got there, I originally signed to Florida State and I was going to run track and field there. But one of the math that I took in the ninth grade, the NCAA didn't accept anymore, right? So I was ruled ineligible. So there's nothing that I could have done. I didn't take no visits. I didn't even really know where Kansas was, let alone Great Bend, Kansas. But I know the history of the track and field program, all the Olympians that they have, all the people that actually went pro from Barton. However, bro, when I landed in Wichita, I saw Wichita. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm like, Wichita looks straight. You know what I'm saying? They got a Domino's. They got different stores. And I remember Coach Bigby, who was, man, he was 25 years old, so not much older than me.
Yeah.
And he says, nah, man, we about two hours from here. I said, what do you mean we're about 2 hours from here? And then you get to Great Bend, Kansas, man. But I want to ask you, bro, what did those times teach you about yourself? Because when I got there, I had a teammate who said, Akeem, I cried for the first 3 months of being there because he had never been home before. And it's in this deserted place with dirt roads, cornfields, and it can actually mentally break you if you don't know, if the mental fortitude and strength isn't there. So let me ask you, man, what did those times teach you about yourself, man?
It taught me that I was a strong person. It taught me hard work. And just trying to work through any situation given, you know. And I was always appreciative of that opportunity too. You know, like I said before, I don't know, like, I honestly don't know what was in me, but I'm always mentally strong. I've always been that way, you know. And it's nothing, I'm not trying to be like bragging about it or nothing like that, but you know, it's a great thing to be mentally strong.
Yeah.
And when I got to Kansas, like, obviously, it was a culture shock because, you know, all you seen was like just straight land, cows, and, you know, it was boring at times, but it wasn't really the same from where I grew up. But
yeah,
it didn't faze me. It didn't faze me not one bit. It didn't faze me to the point where it's like, man, I want to go home. I need to visit home. You know, I think I didn't even visit home the entire time, except for when it was time to go home in the summertime. So you know, throughout that whole time, even not going to visit, you know, straight out of high school, I was pretty much good.
Yeah, man, I never sweared it once I got there, right? Because I knew the mission, I knew the goal, and I knew I had to do things that other people weren't going to do. And one of those things was discipline. I knew people were going to be more talented than me, but I knew that they weren't going to be able to stay disciplined every single time. So that was kind of my extra edge, man. But now you get to Barden, right? And now you're starting to developing the skills, the craft, man. When you got on the court, what was that like, man? Was it easier than you thought? Was it harder than you thought? Or were you just focused on the craft of being better and getting out of there? What was the actual basketball day-to-day like over there for you?
I always believed in myself, but to be honest, at times I had the skills, but at times I thought it was kind of difficult when I got on the court because, you know, I was small, I was skinny, and a lot of those guys that's in community college, they're old. They're older guys, you know. They're
no age limit.
Yeah, you can be any age at that. You can be any age on the team. You know, we had. I'm not sure how old he was. I still talk to him to this day. My older brother Julian. And at the time, I really don't know how old he was, but he was older than us. He was way older than us. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I was about 18, 19 years old. And, you know, guys 3-4 years older than me. And these guys are strong. So I just had to be prepared for that physical part of the game. And that's what it taught me. You know, you got to be strong. And most importantly, mentally strong. Because if these guys are out there on the court killing you, that's going to bring your confidence down. But I always stuck with it. You know what I'm saying? I always stuck with it. I always thought I was the best. And I was trying to be the best. Even though I wasn't the best, I was always trying to be the best, at least the best version of myself.
Man, was there a game when you were playing that you were just like, man, it's finally starting to come together, right? Because I know for me, it wasn't my first year. It was my second year. And that whole year felt different, mainly because I was more healthier, but I knew I understood what everything was going to look like. And I remember there was a meet. It was the first meet of the year. I think I ran like 20:60, right? But that race, I was just like, okay, yeah, it's going to be a problem for these boys out here this year. You know what I'm saying? Was there a game like that for you where you're just like, man, it's finally starting to come together?
I wouldn't say a game. But for my sophomore year, you know, when I started getting these double-doubles and, you know, just grabbing a ton of rebounds, I think I might have averaged. I'm not sure. I don't think I averaged a double-double, but I was getting a lot of double-doubles that season. And that's when I noticed, you know, like, you know, Dell, you're playing well. Yeah. And my coach always believed in me. He always had faith in me, and that gave me even more confidence. Excuse me. So that was really it. You know, once my sophomore year hit, I had – a lot of games where I played very well, and I just knew I could take it to the next level.
Man, there was a game that I saw you play, bro. I think you had like 14-10, and I was like, okay, it's. There's always a couple people that you see that you're just like, okay, these guys are definitely going to go to the next level. I felt like that about Algie Key as well too when he was there. But St. Bonaventure University, man, what drew you back there? Because now you're back on the East Coast. Right. Back in the area that you kind of, you know, grew up in that time, much closer to family than you were before. But why did you pick there?
It was the best school I had. You know, I had a lot of D1s. I only took one visit, and I took a visit to St. Peter's. That's back in New Jersey, Jersey City. But, you know, my mindset, this is how I was thinking at the time. My mindset was whatever school I get. Whatever is the best school I get, I'm taking it. So it don't matter what school it is.
Yeah.
If it's the ACC, the Big East, and St. Bonaventure was the best school. You know, I had schools that was, it was the best conference school I had. So I'm like, I don't care. I wasn't even looking at the players that were recruiting, the players they had. I'm like, Dell, whatever school I get, I'm going and I'm playing. Yeah. That was my mindset. I'm going and I'm playing. And, you know, St. Bonaventure called me. I didn't take a visit. I didn't do no research. They called me like, yo, Dell, we want you to come. And I'm like, this is my best school. I'm taking it. And that was my decision.
How do you handle pressure, bro? Because the world can be heavy at times, right? Because life events can come to the basketball court that can mess up your mind. Plus, you get to a bigger school. There's all these different people around, all these different things. How do you handle pressure, man? How do you stay level-headed when it may not be easy to do so at times?
You know, just believe in yourself, you know. For me, I think personally, I work hard. I work very hard. I'm always working. So I think from the hard work, it comes with handling pressure well. So that's my experience on it, and that's what I can say about that.
So you get the same Bonaventure, man. 2015, your senior year, right? You guys took down that number 18 team, Virginia Commonwealth University, March Madness, right? Well, what do you remember most about that game, man? Because when you're playing a ranked team, man, nobody really expects you to win, especially if you're not a ranked team. But yeah. What was that mindset leading up to the game? Like, did you guys feel like this was your game to be won, or were you just in such a flow? What do you remember most about that game?
What I remember most about the game was just the crowd, the intensity. It was a crazy atmosphere, you know. You know, our games at Bonaventure is always crazy. You know, it's hard to play in there, you know. And, you know, our coach, he really got us up for that game. You know, once he said, you know, it's a TV game, this is a ranked team, you know, you don't really get this many opportunities that come by. And, you know, we just took advantage of it, man. We just took advantage. And VCU was always a tough competitor for us. You know, they were always a good team. You know, at that time, they had Shaka Smart. They were playing a crazy defense. Their defense was crazy.
Yeah.
But we just stuck up to the challenge. And, you know, I enjoyed every moment at Bonaventure. And I wish I could go back to those times. It was very fun.
Man, how was that adjustment at school, though? Right? Because I know when I got to Alabama, my first semester, bro, I struggled because I wasn't used to the schedule, right? Where you have a conference meet and you leave like a week before, and teachers don't give a dang if you're going to cover all your classes or not, because they already think you spoiled because you're a student athlete, right? So I kind of struggled a little bit. But how was that adjustment for you? Was it an easy one, or was it something that kind of came easy for you?
It kind of came easy for me, because they set it up to where we're able to manage it well. You know, like, we had study hall, and our coach, he wasn't playing. Like,
yeah.
If he was messing up in the classroom, you know, we was running suicides, and we wasn't doing 5, 10. We did 30 suicides, you know, and that's even if you miss a study hall meeting, you know what I'm saying? So I think I've handled it well. You know, obviously they had classes where it was hard for me, but that was, you know, that was something I could overcome. And I did it. You know, I graduated already.
What was the conversations like with your mom and brother back home, man? How were you staying focused when, you know, sometimes when you leave the home, you kind of worry about how everything is going back home, right? Well, what was those conversations with your mom like?
She was just always telling me, you know, stay focused, you know, stay out the way. And, you know, once I got to college, you know, she understood, you know, like, the whole basketball scheme. And because before, when I was in high school, like I said, she didn't know anything really about basketball from me going to Barton. So, you know, once I got to Bonaventure, she really understood, you know, how things were going for me. And, you know, they were always supportive of me. And I was never even going home for break from school. I was always staying at school. So I was out the way, you know, that one summer when I was at Barton, I went home and I got shot, and I had came back to Barton. So once I went
shot.
To Barton, yeah, I did. I got shot. Yeah, after my freshman year at Barton, I got shot. You know what I'm saying? In the summertime. And that's
how
when
that
I came
happened?
Back. Man, you know, just outside with my homeboys, my friends, and we was just chilling, you know, going out. We was waiting to go out, and, you know, the area we was in was, you know, it wasn't a good area. And, you know, but that's, you know, that's like where my friends are from. Like, they live out there. So, you know, I was out there chilling with them, and, you know, some unexpected things happened, and, you know, that's what it was. But, you know, I'm grateful that I was able to bounce back healthy. I went back to Barton, and I played a great sophomore season. You know, I eventually went to Bonaventure, and, you know, and that's what it was.
Bro, that's crazy, man.
Yeah. You know, I'm surprised you didn't know about that, man.
Bro, I didn't know. I didn't even know, bro. Sometimes I'd be so locked in, I don't hear nothing, bro. But that's crazy, man. Man,
yeah.
Man, so senior year is done, bro. And obviously, you know, we're thinking NBA, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you entered the draft that year, right?
I mean, I did, but you know, it's as a senior, you have to, you know what I'm saying? But that don't necessarily mean anything. You know, it's 1,000 seniors.
What was that process like for you, man? Because, you know, the one thing that I've learned, especially speaking-wise and speaking with different athletes, is like, man, there is always different routes to take, but they may not have the information on how to go about it. People go and they don't get drafted and they think, man, I can't play basketball no more, but that's not the case. When that whole process, man, did you expect to play in the league? Like, was that something in the back of your mind?
No, it wasn't in the back of my mind, but, you know, obviously I was being realistic, to be honest. But, you know, my dream was always to make the NBA. You know, once I got to college, it was just a different level, you know. Yeah. It was really a different level, you know. And, you know, you're growing up, you're seeing all these guys, and you're always talking about, yeah, I'm going to the NBA. I mean, but it's hard, bro. Like, you have to be very good. Like, you have to be very good. So, you know, my senior year, I was realistic. I didn't have a shot. If I would have had a shot, I would have took it. I had a lot of things to work on. And, you know, when it's your time, it's your time. When you have a chance to capitalize on something, you got to do it. And I didn't have the chance. You know, I'm not mad that I didn't have the chance, but, you know, everything happens in life for a reason. But, you know, I have my overseas opportunities. I have a couple of agents that hit me up after my senior year. And, you know, I browse through their profiles and see which ones had what players in which countries, good situations. And, you know, I end up going with my agent that got me a job in Europe.
Man, for the past 6-7 years, you've been playing in Europe, as you just talked about, man, different parts of Europe. How is that European basketball different from the American style of play, man?
It's more physical.
Yeah.
It's more physical. They let you play a little bit more. You know, it's less one-on-one. You know, it's very different. It's less one-on-one. More screen, more pick and rolls going on, more sharing the basketball. But I would say the biggest thing that stands out is definitely the physicality. You know, over here, they don't really call fouls like that. But back home, they call fouls.
Man, that being on the court is one thing. But when you have to go home, right, and you're going into this new environment, new language, new place, how they do things, what's been the hardest part about being over there, man? Like, do you ever feel alone sometimes? Because it's a far trip from your family and friends. Like, do you ever feel that sometimes?
Yeah, my first year, it was a struggle my first year, to be completely honest. I did want to go home, but I wanted to go home for several reasons, though. It was a couple reasons behind why I wanted to go home. So, but my first year, I definitely wanted to go home. And I did actually go home, too.
Yeah.
I did go home my first year.
What brought you home, man?
Excuse me?
What brought you home? What made you want to go home?
I had a little situation with this girl in college. And, you know, when I went overseas, we had problems. And that caused me to, like, you know, kind of be like, I need to go home and handle my situation with her, because being away from her, you know, it's making me miss home and making me miss her. And it's making it, you know, and the time difference is really a time difference. So I don't know what's going on there. She don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
And, you know, and on top of that, my first year, I wasn't getting paid much. You know, when you're asking for things from the management, they're taking long. You're asking, I'm getting paid $1,500 a month, and they're late with my money.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it was just a lot going on. But my first year, I was in Czech Republic, and I left early. I went back home. I actually breached my contract, something I shouldn't have done. I learned my lesson, and my agent was able to, you know, save my career and give me another job in Cyprus. So, you know, after Cyprus, I was able to take off, you know, and take advantage of the opportunity I had.
Bro, I remember when I went pro, bro, and I was, and, you know, and I was starting to make some money, right? And I remember I got a check in the mail and I'm like, man, okay, I got a second place finish here, a third over here. I won this meet. I'm like, man, the check gonna be nice, because when I turned pro and I moved to Phoenix, man, I was on the floor for the first 5 months. I was on an air mattress for the next 3 months. So I didn't have any money. And when I got the check, yo, I was so confused, because I'm like, yo, where's all this money going? Agents taking money. And in track and field, it's one of those things where you can run in March, you may not be getting paid till like June. It's like, no, I need the money now, right? Yeah. So it can be tough when there is a lot of different strains and things that is out of your control. You know, every day in life, period, isn't always going to be a great day. And we all face mental struggles and battles at times, bro. When you are discouraged, bro, like when you feel down sometimes, man, like when there's things out of your control, man, how do you stay encouraged? How do you pick yourself up when life can feel heavy at times?
You know, I think I've matured so much, so I know how to handle things better. So when that happens, I usually, you know, obviously in a moment when I'm discouraged, you know, it's going to happen, you know. But what I do is I try to look forward and look where I can do the best, you know, look and stay positive. That's the main thing. I try to always put positive things in my mind, you know, always putting aspirations in my mind, affirmations, all type of positive things, because the more you think about positive things, the better things will get for you. That's a fact. And the more you're negative and the more you're down, even though it's hard when you're down to bring yourself up, it's just a battle you have to deal with. It's all a battle. You have to fight this battle. You can't give in, you know, and it's hard for some people to do it. Some people don't ever get up from the battle. They always lose. But luckily for me, I'm a strong person. And, you know, obviously it's going to be, I still have a ton of battles ahead of my life now that I'm going to come across, and who knows how I'm going to deal with it. But as of now, I'm knocking them all out. I'm knocking them all out.
Last few questions, bro. And it's funny, man, when I hear you speak, right? Like it certain parts remind me of myself and how I grew up and the mentality that you kind of have, you know, it is still trying to get my head around it, but you tell me you've been shot, you know what I'm saying? But it's also these different things that help you prepare for when this hardship comes. 2021, man, you tore your ACL and your meniscus. Not to mention the year before was a pandemic year, so everything was kind of shut down. You know, I don't know how it was over there basketball wise, but you couldn't make any money anywhere, really. But you come out of it and you finally get to play again, and then this happens. Walk me through that time for you, bro, because that could not have been an easy time to go through.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. You know, during the pandemic year, you know, my knee was hurting, you know, so I kind of took a long time to sign for the upcoming season, you know, so I signed late in January. That's when I went back to France, and, you know, I felt healthy at the time. And, you know, once I was playing, you know, my knee started hurting again. I mean, maybe I didn't do the right recovery I was supposed to do. I don't think I did, but, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, once I tore my ACL, everything kind of changed. You know, the way I was looking at things changed. You know, I took that whole 19 months off.
Wow!
And you know, I was just learning a lot. You know, even when I thought I was ready, my agent was always asking me, "Are you ready, Dell?" I'm like, "No, I'm not ready, man. I want to feel 100% ready before I leave out." You know what I'm saying? So it was just a long, long, long process that I had to go through. Ups and downs, you know, a lot of people leaving my side, you know, family, friends, man, it gets deep, man, because it just shows who's there for you when you're really down, because I was really down, you know, I was really down, you know, that 19 months off, and, you know, I don't know if I'm gonna play basketball ever again. I didn't know. It was like I said, that was one of my down moments, I can say. Like, it was times I was discouraged, and I would ask myself, am I going to play basketball again? But, you know, throughout my journey, you know, I've came across a lot of great people, you know, and I came across this book. One second. This book right here is called The Power of Your Subconscious Mind.
Joseph Murphy.
Mm-hmm. Somebody recommended this book to me, and I believe it changed my life, and it just changed the way I think. You know, it just changed the way I think, and I always believed in myself. I always stayed positive, and I knew another opportunity was going to come. Even if it was taking long, I just honestly knew another opportunity was going to come, and I was going to take full advantage of it. And, you know, here I am back in France, you know, post ACL surgery. You know, I'm still having, you know, after the surgery, you know, you still have, you know, your little lingering pains. I'm still having some swelling, but I'm still able to play. You know, I played 10 games already. I'm feeling great, you know, but I just have to do my daily maintenance, and I'm glad I got this opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Cause I'm taking full advantage of it. You know what I'm saying? I'm locked in right now, and I'm so appreciative.
You said something, man, that I think is very, very important to get into, because the younger that you are, especially coming up, man, you know, everybody will support you. I don't want to say everybody, but more times than not, when things are going well, you're going to have a lot of people on your side, especially if you have a little bit of athletic edge on other people. Right. But when things happen, an injury, maybe, you know, you're something online comes and somebody's searching into your history and things happen and things start to come to present, man, and people don't stick with you. And the ones that you thought, you know, may have been your side, not returning your calls, not hitting you in the text, it can hurt, bro. Like, as men, we like to think that, you know, we can push past that stuff. You know what I'm saying? But men, when something like that happens, like when we get hurt, when we feel betrayed, even, like, it sits with us long, because it's just like, man, you know, I thought that person loved me, man. So how did you navigate through that internally as a man, right? Like, when you thought people were supposed to be by your side, and it's like, yo, where'd everybody go? Did you acknowledge that it hurt? And how did you get past that? Because I don't think we as men acknowledge the pain, nor do we know practical things how to heal from those moments.
Yeah, obviously we all know, you know, when someone, you know, leaves you for dead, and we know the pain. But for me, you know, I understand why they were in my life in the first place. You know what I'm saying? You know, people gonna be there for a reason, and then they just show their true colors. Like, they show, like, you know, it's like people that you've done so much good for.
You're speaking, bro. You're speaking.
Like, you've done so much good for it. Like, I'm really like one of the nicest people. Like, I don't like drama. I just like peace, bro. And I try to help people out the best I can. Like, in my whole career, I always just thought, you know, I'm overseas, I'm making money. You know, I just want to help my family out, you know, and sometimes I put a lot of people before myself, and even it cost me in the long run.
Yeah.
Oh, but like I said, at the end of the day, a lot of people left me, people that were close to me, you know what I'm saying? People that were close to me. And, you know, I don't have no ill will towards anyone. You know, they leave me, okay, so be it. I have my own life. I'm focused on what my journey is in life, you know. And that's just moving forward, positivity, making a way for myself, and making a way for people that truly appreciate me. And, you know, that's about it, you know. But I wish everyone the best, you know. I don't have no ill will towards anyone. You know, you just can't be part of my blessings. When I have my blessings, you just can't be a part of my blessings, you know what I'm saying? And if you have your own blessings going on, congrats to you. I'm not hating. I'm happy for everyone. Honestly, I'm happy for everyone.
Man, a couple of years ago, bro, I remember it was New Year's Eve, like December 31st. I remember, bro, I was sitting in the room one day, all right, and I was just kind of reflecting a little bit on the year and previous years, and I was reflecting on my relationships that I have with the people around me, and I got to a point where I was literally looking through my phone. And I was just like, yo, I have cats here that I haven't even spoken to in months, right? Yes. And if I don't reach out to them, they don't reach out to me. And it's kind of one of those things where I was like, there are people in our lives over time that we realize that if you think about it, it's a one-sided relationship. One-sided relationships will not thrive. And so it's important definitely to know who's around you, man, because you always can't be the glue in every situation. At some point, Everything in life is reciprocal. Trees need oxygen, and we give it that. Everything is reciprocal, and it can be tough. Last two questions, bro. Your team's number one in the league right now. You're averaging for 14 and 7, if I remember looking correctly. One block, couple, 2-3 assists per game. From the ACL injury, bro, things are looking well, man. What's been this season like for you?
It's been great. You know, I really can't complain. You know, I'm in a great situation. I have a great coach. I have great teammates. You know, they welcome me with open arms. And they allowed me to be myself, you know. So I'm being myself, and I'm doing what I can to make the team win. You know, like I said, I got this opportunity. My agent presented me with this job, and, you know, I'm taking full advantage of it. You know what I'm saying? We got 7 more games. We win 7 in a row, and we promote our team up to the next league. And that's our goal, you know. Our goal is to go up to the next league, and that's what I'm locked in on, you know. So once we win, I'm going to have a better contract next year. So, you know, this is kind of like my rebuilding year. So I feel very confident about this year, and I'm super locked in.
Last question, bro. You this is what I respect about you, bro, is you are showing people back home who are coming up from those same environments a different path in a positive light, right? And you're doing what you got to do to make it happen, man. But what's been the biggest transformation with you, right? Because we're always our toughest critics, right? We always are so hard on ourselves, but each year we'd like to think that we improve and we progress as people in general. What's been one of the biggest transformation within yourself over the years, man?
I would think my mind and my health, you know. I just want to become more self-aware, more conscious, more healthier. I think that's the biggest aspect of my life right now. You know, it's tough to do, you know, when you have all these distractions, social media. It's just a ton of distractions, but I feel like my consciousness, I just want to upgrade my consciousness, you know, be more aware of what's going on in the world. And I just want to get to know myself, you know, a lot more better. You know, I started meditating, and I can credit meditating to what I'm doing now. You know, it's definitely helped me out a lot. And like I said, I just want to keep on getting better with the things I'm doing and just staying consistent with it. And then I feel like I'll be on the right path in my journey in life.
Well, appreciate your time, man. It's been good to see you, man. It's good to hear your voice, bro. It's good to see you too, man. Doing your thing, man. What's the best way for people to keep in touch, keep in contact with you, man? What's I know, you know, we got to be social media conscious at times, right? Because it can suck us in that world. But what's the platform that you're on the most? So if people want to support and follow along the journey.
You know, really just Instagram. You know, my Facebook is, I really don't be on Facebook, but Instagram is my main social media platform. You know, I don't really post too much, but you know, I'm trying to post more content, more pictures, just more of anything, you know, the city, whatever, you know, because people tell me all the time, you don't post nothing. Like, so I'm like, all right, I'm gonna try my best, but it's just not in my nature. You know, sometimes it's just not in my nature to just do it. But, you know, I'm trying my best. But I would say Instagram for sure.
Bro, man, honestly, man, you know, from me to you, bro, mad proud of you, dog. Because telling you, man, you should have been broken a long time ago. But yet God gave you the fortitude and the strength and the covering to be here today, man. So even when it's tough, bro, man, as long as you got strength in the body, bro, keep going, man. It's only a matter of time, bro. But, man, appreciate your time, bro. Again, as I always say, man, if I can help with anything, please let me know. And if you got any of the links, bro, please send the link.
So I got you. Yo, man, thank you for the interview. And like I said, I look at your quotes and your videos all the time. You know, I have some of yours to save. You know,
I appreciate you, bro.
it definitely helps out a lot. You know,
my guy, man, always here, bro. Always love, bro. We'll talk soon, bro.
Of course, appreciate it, bro.
All right, have a good day, man.
All right, be easy.